Good afternoon. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM, FM 95.9, and also myklgr.com. We are double booked with guests here today. We'll be joined by Brandon Warren back to give us Twins baseball coverage again this season. Brandon will help us recap all of the free agent signings that the Twins made throughout the offseason, and we'll talk a little bit about the current roster setup and some potential battles in spring training. So looking forward to having Brandon back in the fold coming up at 3:15 today. Also at right around 3:40, we'll talk to John Folke of the Timberwolves Radio Network. We're going to talk a little Big Ten tournament today as well, as that is getting underway with a couple of games. But some interesting changes to the Big Ten tournament this year, including the fact that they are playing the Big Ten tournament in New York. Not necessarily a change, but still interesting that all of the Big Ten teams, which are predominantly from the Midwest, would have to travel to New York. Nonetheless, we'll talk about all of that here on the show today. So let's get right to it. We'll start off with a look at our top sports headlines here for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines for today, the Big Ten tournament kicking off with a couple of opening round games today, including the Gophers taking on number 14, Rutgers. Gophers getting the 11th seed in the Big Ten tournament. Illinois will play Iowa, the Fighting Illini, the 13th seed, Iowa the 12th seed. Games tomorrow include Wisconsin and Maryland, Michigan and Northwestern, Michigan and the winner of Iowa-Illinois, Northwestern and Penn State, and Indiana taking on the winner of Minnesota-Rutgers. Your top four seeds getting double byes: Michigan State, Ohio State, Purdue, and Nebraska. All the action from Madison Square Garden here this season, and plenty more to discuss with the Big Ten tournament coming up in just a bit. Minnesota Wild in action last night against Mike Yeo and the St. Louis Blues, and the Wild get a ton of offense from their top line, including Eric Staal, who had three goals, Jason Zucker a goal and four assists, as the Wild win 8-3. The Blues seem like they are taking on some water, but an interesting parallel raised by Brandon Molesky of KFAN. The Minnesota Wild and St. Louis Blues record since Nate Prosser was waived, former Wild defenseman waived by St. Louis and claimed by the Wild. The Blues are now 17-20-3. The Wild 26-10-4. So shout out to Brandon Molesky for tweeting out that info earlier. Certainly interesting that the Wild have been playing such a good stretch while the Blues have struggled as well. Former Bears running back and Vikings difficult matchup. Matt Forte announcing his retirement today after 10 years in the NFL. Forte, after his time with the Bears, ended up with the New York Jets over the past couple of seasons and now has decided to call it a career. So one of the more prolific pass-catching running backs in recent memory has decided that he is done playing football for his career. Some big names cut today by NFL teams as they get ready for free agency, which starts up on March 14th. Mike Glennon, Jonathan Stewart, Muhammad Wilkerson, all some of the biggest names that are cut as teams try to create some salary cap space to make moves here in the next couple of weeks. And the Vikings may have another suitor on the offensive line that they can look to, as Joe Berger, who was hinting at retirement earlier in the offseason, has decided he will not call it a career and is going to come back to play next year. So the Vikings certainly could look at him as an offensive line target, and we'll see if he decides to do so here this offseason. So that is a look at our top sports headlines here for today. We'll take a quick break, and we'll talk some Twins baseball with Brandon Warren when we come back after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play.
We are back here on The Scoop, and a familiar sound with Major League Baseball in spring training. We are joined once again by Brandon Warren of Zone Coverage and also The Athletic to talk Twins baseball. Brandon, good to have you back in the fold.
Yeah, it feels like there's a little spring in the air. I don't know about Redwood Falls, but it's about 35, 38, 40 degrees here in the Twin Cities, so it's starting to feel like baseball weather.
Yeah, we got a bunch of snow this past weekend, and we're right around that 35, 36 degree mark, so it's certainly nice to see the snow start to melt, temperatures heating up, chatter on Major League Baseball heating up as well, and it has been a busy offseason for the Twins. I know a while back we talked just about some of the moves that the Twins made in the early portion of free agency, but they have certainly been very busy here over the last couple of weeks, adding some pretty big additions.
Yeah, I mean, kind of pillaging the Tampa Bay Rays in the process with the Jake Odorizzi trade for Jermaine Palacios, and then going out and getting Logan Morrison, a guy whose drum I've been banging on for the entire offseason that the Twins should be going after, taking a look at a guy like that. 38 homers last year, big change in his approach, and it resulted in a big season for him. And the Rays, being the Rays, didn't have the budget or didn't want to not only not offer him a qualifying offer, but not even make him a contract offer. So the Twins get to be the beneficiary of that, or you know, whatever you want to call it. And so now the middle of that order, with or without Miguel Sano, based on whatever happens to begin the season, still looks pretty formidable. And so that's that's a pretty good start to offensive additions with the, I think it's now, what, six pitchers they've added besides? So they've been busy.
We'll dissect everything here throughout the segment today. But before we get to any of that, you mentioned Miguel Sano, and it sounds like Major League Baseball has talked to him here recently, and looks like they are wrapping up their investigation into the domestic violence that he was a part of earlier this offseason. Any sense on when we'll hear what the discipline will be that is handed down for Sano?
I mean, I feel like the writing on the wall is not too long from now. I don't think they want to drag it out to the point where the Twins are in late March trying to figure out how their roster is going to shake out with or without him on it to start the season. And I mean, I think I get the sense it's going to be some sort of punishment, because I don't think they want to show anything other than a real strong stance against this. So could it be as much as 30 games, a month? I think it's definitely possible. And that's where it opens the door for someone like Eric Dybar to make the team, or maybe Kenny Vargas gets one last chance off the bench as a thumper. It's a tough situation, and it's not ideal for the Twins. It's not ideal for Sano, but it also wasn't ideal for the young lady affected either. And so it's just something you gotta take and deal with, and hope everybody is better for it after the fact, because it's a messy situation, but you never want to have these kind of things hang on into the season or anything like that either.
You mentioned Logan Morrison. Is it fair to say that the Twins viewed Morrison as some insurance, but also just simply played the market in terms of adding Morrison to the fold?
Yeah, I mean, he had a virtually identical season to Yonder Alonso, who signed a two-year deal worth $18 million with Cleveland, and he got a deal for 1 year and $5.5 million with an option and some other escalators that'll possibly top it out at $16.5 million. So the Twins did better there. You know, there's a little more uncertainty, but also keep in mind the Twins weren't replacing a Carlos Santana. They're shoehorning a guy into a spot that was filled by Robbie Grossman last year rather than losing a franchise backbone like Santana. So different situations, and again, if you wait longer in the offseason, those prices come down, which is a pretty good, you know, way to signify what we were seeing at the end of the winter meetings when the Twins came home with Michael Pineda and Fernando Rodney, and I think Zach Duke was pretty close after that. People were like, this is it, and you say, hey, the winter's not over. There's still 2-3 months before they even start throwing baseballs down in Fort Myers yet. And this has probably been the most active Twins offseason I can remember, and they may not be done. I know they say they're done, but they may not be.
I want to bring up a kind of an interesting thought as well in regards to Logan Morrison and the effect that he might have on some of the Twins' left-handed hitters. And I've seen this theory floated around a little bit on Twitter, and I can't think of who had it first, but I know there have been a couple people that I've seen questioning it, and I wonder if Morrison will have a positive effect on Max Kepler, a guy who certainly could benefit from adding a little bit of loft to his swing in order to try to hit the ball out a little bit more than he does.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with that theory, which is basically shortened to elevate and celebrate, is that, you know, line drives are awesome and fly balls end up giving you extra base hits. Ground balls, you can hit the ball hard on the ground, but that's singles and ground outs. You're significantly, and I guess pun intended, limiting your ceiling by hitting the ball on the ground. And if you lift the ball and hit it hard, if you go to the park, it can run the gaps for doubles and triples. And so, we all learned in elementary school, hit it hard, hit it on the ground. And it's not exactly high-level analysis to come back and say, geez, you know, that results in singles, maybe some doubles if you roll it over the first or third base bag. Whereas, yeah, hit it hard and get it in the air. And that's what, Morrison did this past year, 2017, for 38 home runs, when the two previous years before, he was 31 home runs combined. And so you look at his ground ball fly ball ratio, and it went from like 1.4 to 1.2 to 0.7, which means he's hitting, one fly ball for every 0.7 ground balls. And so as that progresses throughout a season, you're going to see better results. And it might, mess with some of his other rates as far as like batting average on balls in play and all that. But he's also taking bigger, healthier rips. He's striking out a little bit more. But in turn, he's taking more walks for the respect factor, too. So all in all, it's a good trade-off for guys that are physically strapping like he is. He's 6'3", and I think he's listed at 245. There's no reason a guy like that should be hitting singles. He should be hitting doubles and home runs.
Brandon, looking at maybe the most important moves that the Twins made this offseason come down to the bullpen, and we saw Fernando Rodney added, as you talked about, Zach Duke as well, and they also added Addison Reed. And you look at that trio, you've got a guy in Fernando Rodney who, and I crunched the numbers right after he was signed, Rodney gave up something like 26 of the 27 earned runs he allowed all season over the span of like 7 outings. So you subtract those just bad games, and he allowed, I think, just 1 earned run in the rest of his appearances combined, which is pretty phenomenal. He had some great numbers in terms of strikeouts, low walk rate. So he can come in, be the ninth inning guy, but then you've got Addison Reed, who can cover both roles, and also Zach Duke, who will be a very critical piece to be able to get hitters out from the left side of the plate as well.
So what they did was, you're kind of getting rid of the innings taken up by guys like Craig Breslow and Michael Tonkin last year, who were putting up 5.0 and plus ERAs. Now, it also might knock guys like Alan Buznitz out of the bullpen. Tyler Kinley might get sent back to the Marlins, and that's unfortunate. But what it does is it creates more competition at Rochester with guys who've pitched in the big leagues but may not be as sturdy as you want as far as regression is considered or concerned. With Rodney, he's got young guy skills, as I've said, on numerous platforms. He throws hard, gets grounders, and gets strikeouts. Sometimes can battle with control and effectiveness, but 300 career saves means he's been doing this for a real long time. Reed has closed. He's been a setup man. He's even worked in some middle relief. He was a big-time prospect going back to his Diamondback days. doesn't necessarily throw gas, but just has a really good repertoire and knows what he's doing with it. And then you're protected on the back end. You know, if you don't have Reed and Fernando Rodney goes sideways, you know, you don't have a Matt Belisle to fall back on. Then you start looking at Hildenberger in the ninth. Then you get pretty shallow and short in the later innings. So it's just more added depth. And then Duke, since he moved to the bullpen full-time in 2014 with the Brewers, has nearly a 60% ground ball rate, 10 strikeouts per nine, and he's not as susceptible to righties as most lefties are. So he gives you some help with Taylor Rogers there, allows you to protect Rogers a bit more in terms of having him face fewer righties. And again, it's just fortifying. It's like if you have a wall already, you can make it stronger. You don't have to rebuild an entire wall. And then the parts that you were using beforehand, you can, you know, send back to Rochester for reinforcements when someone gets hurt, or, you know, if somebody throws four innings one night, you need to ship them out and get a fresh arm in there. They got a lot more options. And last year, I think they used, what, 40 pitchers or something like that, or 38 yeah. pitchers? So you always can feel like keepers, you know. They're going to send some pretty good guys down to Rochester. Well, the odds that Alan Buznitz comes up here and throws 35, 40 innings still is probably pretty high, because someone will get hurt, someone might get traded, someone might get released because they're not very good. A lot of things can happen. And so they really do have more pitching depth in the bullpen now than they did, you know, 365 days ago. And I think that's what you're always shooting for.
Brandon, I know people probably a little disappointed that the Twins didn't end up landing Yu Darvish. It sounds like they gave a very competitive offer, but the Cubs were able to go just a little bit longer than the Twins were comfortable with, which is fine. The Twins were able to acquire Jake Odorizzi, who seems like a pretty good fallback option. They also added Anibal Sanchez. What do you like about both Odorizzi and Sanchez, maybe more so as a depth piece, but what do they bring to the Twins?
Well, with Sanchez, even when he hasn't been particularly good, is this is a guy who still strikes people out. And so there's always that part in the back of your mind of knowing that maybe there's one thing you can flip, whether it's sequencing, location, something that maybe Jason Castro or Mitch Garver or Garvin Alston, any of these guys in this support staff, whether it's a players or field staff, can come up with and maybe make him, you know, even just get a little closer to good again. And I think he's only 33 or 34, so it's not like he's guaranteed that he's just completely washed. And so, you know, you take flyers like that. When you get a Mike Pelfrey or a Kevin Correa, you're not even getting has-beens. You're getting guys who are the never-was-es, like Mighty Ducks 1, like the coach, Coach Riley from the Hawks says. A has-been at least has been there and knows how to do it again if their body cooperates. And again, you know, Father Time is undefeated and all that stuff, but who knows? It's a flyer. It doesn't cost them anything if they cut him at the end of spring, you know, $500,000 to wish him all the best. And, you know, then you've got Jake Odorizzi, whose numbers last year aren't terribly impressive. But when he came back down the stretch, he was really, really good for the last, I think it was like 8 or 10 starts. Looked a lot more like the guy that everybody thought he was going to be, you know, coming through the Brewers, Royals, and Rays system. He's not even 30 yet, and he's been traded, I think it's 3 times now. So, I don't know. I mean, I would compare him to a really healthy Scott Baker when Scott Baker was at his best. And people might grumble, but you know what? Scott Baker is your number 3 or 4 starter. That's a pretty darn good, option.
The market still kind of trying to feel itself out, and there have been some comments from Thad Levine and Derek Falvey that the Twins are most likely done in terms of adding players, but there's still names like Lance Lynn out there. If the numbers continue to come down for those players who are looking to land on major league teams, do you think it's likely that they will be able to add a guy near the end of or the middle of spring training to further help the rotation?
Until they've signed somewhere else, you can't close the door. And I know that they keep saying, this is probably going to be it. This is probably going to be it. Well, that's just the public, you know, trying to leverage. You're trying to leverage to the public, saying, hey, you know, we think we're probably done. Maybe that knocks $2 or $3 million off the price. And then all of a sudden it's at a spot where you feel comfortable, whether it's a one-year deal or a multi-year deal with options or something, where maybe you can make it fair for both sides while, you know, still cashing in on the fact that it's spring training time, games are happening, and some of these guys are still not signed. So I think it's not going to stun me if they land one of those guys. I'm going to come out and just say it, because, you know, you've already come this far and you're this close to challenging a Cleveland team that has been a little bit weakened by this free agent market. why not just go for it? And so I think there's a chance that they're still interested in those guys for sure.
Brandon, I did want to ask you as well, with all these free agents still available, Major League Baseball, the Players Association has been attempting to give opportunities for guys to get into game shape as spring training progresses, and even had an exhibition a few days ago to try to show off their skills as well. I don't recall there ever having been something like this, or at least not recently. Have you ever seen anything along this line with the Players Association trying to help the players just stay in game shape?
No, it almost feels like they're just sandlotting it, but, you know, with the help of the MLBPA, you know, it's like you see those three-on-three NBA leagues with Rashad McCann still playing, and
yeah.
It's like the filler time for ESPN at like 2:30 in the morning, and they're playing in all these gyms, they're playing half court or whatever. I mean, this is unprecedented. It almost feels like the replacement players back in 1995 when I was a kid, and, you know, just the bizarreness that was going on there. Might be a little bit before your time. I was about 9 back then. So,
yeah, I was a little bit younger than that. But
well, Rick Reed was there. He ended up being a Twin, and a few other guys who played in the big leagues. But yeah, it's bizarre, and I don't know what the answer is as far as, you know, they want to say collusion or all these weird financial terms and all that. But it's uncharted territory for sure. And at the same time, I hope that the next CBA is not contentious. Hopefully they can figure out how to fix all this so that everyone is happy and we don't have another offseason like this. And, you know, all the big players next year available in the offseason, your Bryce Harpers and all that, I don't think we're going to have it happen. But, man, could you imagine if that's another offseason where things are really slow and Bryce Harper's still looking for work as we get close to March? I mean, that would be a nightmare.
Yeah, that'd be the worst case scenario for Major League Baseball, is to have something like this happen with all those guys available. So we'll hope that they get it all sorted out. I think, Brandon, with us kind of running short on time here today, we'll save some of the roster battles for next week. But before we go, I did want to give you a chance. I know you have started up a new endeavor, a daily podcast talking Twins baseball. So wanted to give you a chance to give a little shout out to that here today.
Yeah, Locked On Twins, part of the Locked On Sports Podcast Network. It's the brainchild of the Jazz play-by-play broadcaster David Locke. And so he's doing it with teams in NBA and NFL, and they just heard it. They looked me up. And so we do a show every day with myself and Ryan Turnquist, a friend of mine who's just an insanely dedicated Twins fan. And so between him and me, as far as my coverage and his fandom, we cover pretty much all the angles. So every weekday, if you go to Locked On Twins, you can find it, subscribe on iTunes, or find us on Twitter. You know, I'm at Brandon_Warren. He's at 2__Keynes with a Z. And just check us out, or find us at Locked On Twins on Twitter, and we tweet out the shows from there as well.
Outstanding, Brandon. Great stuff here today. Baseball is close to coming back, and we'll continue to break down the 2018 Minnesota Twins here over the next couple of weeks leading up to opening day. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Yeah, spring is in the air, and it feels so good.
Brandon, have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Brandon Warren of Zone Coverage and also The Athletic, talking Twins baseball with us here today. Just looking at the Twins free agency moves throughout the offseason. And yeah, I remember being one of those people who was a little bit unsure with what the Twins were doing early on in the process. And man, you look at what they've done since. Certainly a very good-looking team here at this point, and it could get even better depending on how the rest of free agency goes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Big Ten tournament basketball. That is coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
Back here on The Scoop, the Big Ten tournament getting underway at Madison Square Garden here today. The matchups, as mentioned, number 12, Iowa, hosting number 13, Illinois, and then number 14, Rutgers, and number 11, Minnesota. The winner of Illinois-Iowa will advance to take on Michigan tomorrow. The winner of Rutgers-Minnesota will take on Indiana tomorrow as well. Found it interesting as well, as we look at the odds to win. Purdue and Michigan State have the best odds at 7-5. Michigan 9-2 odds to win the Big Ten tournament. Ohio State's at 6-1. Nebraska 18-1. Penn State 30-1. Maryland, Indiana, Wisconsin all 40-1. Northwestern is 60-1. And the field is 50-1 to win the Big Ten tournament. But the biggest question I had when the Big Ten tournament started and just looking at the matchups here today, why on earth are they playing the games in New York? A sign was put up by, I believe, the Big Ten, trying to illustrate a point for how far teams have come to play in this tournament. But in the end, you look at how far teams have to travel to play at Madison Square Garden. Iowa City, Iowa, 915 miles away. Minneapolis, 1,016 miles. Lincoln, Nebraska, 1,185 miles away. Madison, Wisconsin, 809 miles away. Champaign, Illinois, 750 miles. Ann Arbor, Michigan, 515 miles. East Lansing, Michigan, at 558 miles. Evanston, Ohio, 715 miles away. State College at Penn State, 203 miles away. So you look at the makeup of the Big Ten, most of the teams are located in the Midwest. Why not have it over there? Because then you don't have, Rutgers and Maryland have to go a little ways out of their way. Rutgers has just 31 miles to travel to get to Madison Square Garden. And Maryland as well, they have 199 miles to travel. So those two are the only ones, I think, and Penn State, those are the only two under, only three under 500 miles to travel to be in the Big Ten tournament. So it's interesting to see. I would guess if I had to pick that I think Michigan State will probably win the Big Ten tournament. But if we've learned anything about basketball around March, you can't predict it at all. So we'll see if the Big Ten does anything to change the venue, and also the fact that it's a week earlier than it typically is. There is that as well. So we'll see if they do anything to address these changes and see if maybe they try to pull the game a little bit closer to where everyone is. But for now, we'll see if the Gophers can win tonight to try to advance in the tournament. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll be joined by John Folkey of the Timberwolves Radio Network. That is coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
And we're joined on The Scoop today by John Folkey, the executive producer and radio host of the Timberwolves Radio Network. John, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you again, Seth.
The All-Star break in the books, the second half, and I use air quotes because there are under 20 games left in the season, is underway for the Timberwolves. And, John, unfortunately, we got to start with the bad news that the Wolves received over the weekend. Jimmy Butler goes down with an injury against Houston, and it's revealed that he tore his meniscus. He had surgery on Sunday. What has the mood been like around the team since the events of Friday unfolded?
You know, it's interesting because the team hasn't really been around. They had that game Friday in Houston. They were supposed to fly back that night, had some plane issues, and didn't get to leave until Saturday morning. Arrived early afternoon on Saturday and had to turn around and play the Bulls that night. And then as they kind of recovered from that, Sunday morning, hopped on a flight out to Sacramento, and they've been on the road ever since. So, you know, it's kind of been weird in the sense that the injury happened, but we haven't really, you know, been around the guys a whole lot to kind of see that mood. What I can tell you, based off the interviews and stuff that we've gotten from the road, is that the guys are all, you know, really focused in on picking up for Jimmy. And, you know, Coach Tibbs has said it a number of times, the guys have echoed him, that even without Jimmy, we've got enough to win. And when you look at the talent that's on this roster, obviously you've still got an all-star in Karl Anthony Towns. You've got Andrew Wiggins, you know, those two guys, some of the cornerstones of this franchise. And then you've got veterans in Jeff Teague, Jamal Crawford, and Taj Gibson, guys who have been through these situations. So, you know, while you're missing a big piece in Jimmy Butler, who gave you over 20 points a game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and, you know, all the intangibles of the steals, the deflections, the defensive pressure, the you know, the leadership, these guys have proven that, you know, they can score. That they can win games, and they have the experience of those veteran guys of being in big games and being in playoff hunts and playoff chases. So, well, it's definitely a big blow not to have Jimmy out there. The coaching staff has kind of sent that message down the line that, hey, we still have enough to win, and you guys have to, you know, circle the wagons and go out and get it done.
We have seen a couple of wins in a row, as you mentioned, against the Bulls. The Wolves won against the Kings as well Monday night. So it seems like the team has certainly stepped it up. And with this tough stretch coming up for the Wolves, how important was it for them to be able to just regroup a little bit heading into this little gauntlet here for the next 7 games?
Well, I think it was huge. And, you know, it was kind of fortunate to be able to face teams like Chicago and Sacramento, who have struggled this year, and, you know, we're playing young guys and, you know, with an eye towards the future, and it allowed Minnesota to figure some things out. You know, they didn't have the greatest of first halves in either of those games, but they buckled down in the second half, got that defense going and had a balanced attack offensively and were able to put those two teams away. And I think in the process, hopefully kind of figured some things out in terms of what's going to be asked of guys and how they're going to play without Jimmy Butler in the lineup. So a couple of good wins there, but, you know, what I take from those two games as well is the balance that Minnesota had. I mean, 6 in double figures on Monday. They had 3 over the 20-point mark. You know, and I think that balance is going to be a big factor moving forward. And then winning the rebounding battle. Wolves had big advantages both Saturday and on Monday. In terms of winning that rebounding edge, and Karl Anthony Towns obviously with 17, a big part of that. But, you know, the Wolves, when they win the battle of the boards, they're practically unbeatable. I mean, the record, I want to say, is 27-7 or something right around there when they win that battle of the boards. So that's a big key, and they were able to do that in both those games. And then the free throw line. You know, on Monday, the Wolves had a huge advantage at the stripe, and that's something they've had all season long. They've been very good about getting to the free throw line, very good about not putting their opponents on the free throw line. And so when you look at kind of those areas, the balance, the rebounding, the free throws, and then not turning the ball over, I look at those areas. If Minnesota can do that night in and night out, even without Jimmy, they're going to put themselves in a position to win some games.
It certainly helps when you got Jeff Teague shooting 51% from the field for the month. How incredible of a run has he been on here in the month of February?
Well, I think that's, you know, what Coach Tibbs expected out of him when they signed him during the offseason, and it's been great to see. You know, at the beginning of the season, he really was trying to find his way in terms of when to be aggressive, when to set guys up, you know, what his role was within the offense, and how he could be effective. And it didn't help that he missed a couple games with that Achilles and then missed a couple games with that knee sprain. And so now he's back. He's healthy, and he seems to be hitting his stride at a great time for Minnesota. And, you know, what you really love about Jeff Teague is when he's getting the ball now, he's decisive and he's pushing the pace. And it's allowing Minnesota to get out in transition. They had 14 fast break points Monday against Sacramento. And, you know, when I talk about winning the rebounding battle, if you can secure a defensive rebound and then get it to Jeff Teague or, you know, get it to Tyus Jones and those guys can push the pace and get out and get some easy looks in transition, that certainly will help. And Jeff's been a big part of that.
John, let's look at this stretch coming up for the Wolves. Tomorrow night they will be in Portland taking on the Trailblazers, then at Utah on Friday. So a tough back-to-back, followed by a couple of home games against Boston and Golden State. With how the Wolves have played this year, do you like their chances to hold it down against that group of four in those next few games?
It's going to be a challenge. I mean, there's no question about it. Portland's playing really good basketball right now. The Moda Center is a tough place to play, and that's an important game because when you look at the standings, you know, Portland's nipping at the heels of Minnesota, and the Wolves are 2-1 against the Blazers this year. And to win that season series and have that tiebreaker would be huge. When you look at the teams that are chasing Minnesota, they've got the tiebreaker against a couple of those teams already. And that, you know, with how closely the West is in terms of basically 3 through 10, that could loom large down the stretch. And so an important game in that regard. And, you know, the Wolves obviously have seen success against the Blazers. But as I mentioned, the Moda Center has been a difficult place to play for the Wolves over the years. So hopefully they can pull that out. But knowing that they've got a couple of wins against the Blazers already, you do like their chances. And, you know, Utah is going to be a challenge as well. Not only is it the second end of a back-to-back, and Utah played on Monday night, and they won't play again until Friday. So they'll be rested and everything, but they've been playing really good lately as well. They've won 12 out of their last 14 games. And so there's nothing easy on this stretch coming up. But, you know, I feel like if Minnesota can do the things that make them good, to make them efficient on the offensive end, like we talked about, that's getting to the free throw line, rebounding the basketball, taking care of it. And then defensively, you know, contest shots, end possessions with a defensive rebound, and get in the passing lanes and get those deflections. You know, the Wolves, they'll put themselves in a good position. But, you know, all these teams coming up here, whether it's just the four that you mentioned or beyond that, you've got San Antonio, Washington, and Houston again. This is a gauntlet right now for Minnesota. So they've really got to be focused and dialed in on the defensive end, and then, you know, efficient and executing on the offensive end as well.
John, I want to backtrack a little bit to before the All-Star break. We haven't had a chance to talk about it, but the Wolves with the tribute to Flip Saunders, and obviously a very emotional scene, but one that I think was very, very well done by the Timberwolves honoring Flip. And just wanted to get your reaction to everything that happened that night, and also the Wolves able to get a win for Flip on his night back on the 15th.
Yeah, I thought it was extremely well done, and I was very proud of the product that we put out on the radio side as well in honoring Flip. And, you know, obviously having grown up in the Twin Cities, but a Timberwolves fan day one, and, you know, living and dying by those Flip KG teams throughout the years, it was an emotional night for myself, and I know for everybody in the organization, for what Flip meant to this team, to this franchise, to the city, to the state, and really to the upper Midwest. And, you know, I think it was a good moment to be able to step back and remember and tell some fun stories and, you know, smile about who Flip was and how he impacted so many lives. And, you know, I think when Flip first passed, we had a chance to do that, but then the season started and you had to get back to work, and everybody from the players to the folks in the organization that, you know, there was a task at hand and everybody had to dial in and get it done. And now, you know, that night was a moment for us to kind of stop and take a breath and kind of pick your head up and remember just what he meant to this organization and the impact that he had. And so it was extremely well done. It was fun to see, you know, Chauncey Billups, Latrell Sprewell, Sam Cassell, Gary Trent, some of those guys that were fixtures on those Flip teams, and also Mark Madsen. You know, Mad Dog was in town as an assistant with the LA Lakers, and, you know, he was obviously a big part of some of those Flip KG teams as well in the early 2000s. So it was really great to see everybody come together, to see that banner up there. And that's the thing, Seth. You know, when we walk into Mayo Clinic Square, we know the impact that Flip had on that building and how important he was in getting that done. And then when you know, look at the roster and you see Andrew Wiggins and you see Gorgui Jang and Shabazz Muhammad and Tyus Jones, Karl Anthony Towns, obviously guys that were all drafted or acquired by Flip, you see, you know, his imprint still on that roster. But 30 years from now, those guys are going to be retired. And, you know, you won't see that imprint on the roster so much. But now every time you walk into Target Center and you look up, you're going to see that banner. And you're going to remember how important he was and his imprint. And so I think it was awesome. I think it was well done. I was very happy to be a part of it. And moments like that are great because it does allow you to kind of take a moment and remember Flip, you know, stop your day-to-day activities that, you know, consume so much of your time and just think about how important he was and what a special person he was.
John, just a couple of overall NBA questions to close here today. Got to talk about Anthony Davis and the run that he's been on recently. Had 53 points Monday night against Phoenix. And it seems like James Harden has been the one most associated with the MVP talk throughout the season, and rightfully so. He's been phenomenal. But how impressive of a stretch has Davis put together here with the Pelicans having won six in a row, trying to get them further solidified in the playoffs?
It's been incredible. I mean, 53 points, 17 rebounds, five block shots on Monday, and that's coming on the heels of like 35 and something else. And, you know, then he had 42 the day before, the game before. I mean, it's the run that he's been on has been absolutely phenomenal. And I loved Rachel Nichols of The Jump and ESPN had a tweet, I believe it was yesterday, where she linked to an interview she did with Davis over the All-Star break. And he basically said his mindset when DeMarcus Cousins went down was he wanted to channel his inner Russell Westbrook and play the way Westbrook played when Durant left Oklahoma City. And obviously we saw, you know, Russ last year average a triple-double and win the MVP honors. And you look at what Anthony Davis has done since Cousins went down, and it's, I mean, he's been incredible. And the numbers he's putting up are just mind-boggling. So I still think, you know, the MVP is Harden's to lose at this point. I think Davis put together a nice run and, you know, certainly had a very good season. But when you look at the overall body of work, I mean, Harden and the Rockets are, you know, putting together an incredible and possibly historic season by the time it's all said and done. And he's been such a huge part of that. But certainly Anthony Davis belongs in that conversation with what we've seen recently.
Final one for you. The San Antonio Spurs continue to keep pace with the Wolves, both trying to vie for that third spot in the West. And they continue to just be able to keep pace without Kawhi Leonard, which is another testament to how good of a coach Greg Popovich is. How unbelievable is it that the Spurs continue to just get it done without their best player and being able to go up against the best teams in the West and the East?
It's amazing. I mean, every day I look at the standings and go, how? and I wish, you know, I wish I knew because it's really incredible. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge has played very well this year. He's kind of found a new gear and a new lease on life since his offseason conversations with Greg Popovich, and they're putting LaMarcus in a much better position to be successful. And then you've just got a lot of guys who, you know, are so good at their roles, whether it's Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Patty Mills, DeJounte Murray, you know, all those guys just, they understand exactly what's expected of them. They don't go beyond that. And the system is set up to make sure that they're all in a position to be successful. And, you know, credit Greg Popovich and the coaching staff for coming up with those schemes, but also credit the leadership of, I mean, going all the way back to David Robinson and Tim Duncan, the culture that those guys established, and, you know, it's continued through Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and into the Kawhi Leonard, the Marcus Aldridge era, that, you know, these guys understand what's expected of them. They go out, they play hard, they don't lose games that they're supposed to win, and that's, I think, a big reason why they find themselves in this position year after year after year.
John, great stuff today. Great to catch up with you again after the All-Star break. We'll see if the Wolves can get through this tough stretch coming up and still be in the third or fourth spot in the West. And we'll catch up with you a little bit later on down the road.
All right, sounds good. Take care, Seth.
John Foakey of the Timberwolves Radio Network joining the show today. We will take our final break. We'll take a look at what's on deck. That's coming up after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
Let's take a look at what's on deck for tonight. Rapid fire here today, starting off in the NHL. The New York Islanders at Montreal at 7 Eastern. Buffalo at Tampa Bay at 7 Eastern. Detroit at St. Louis at 8 Eastern. Calgary at Colorado at 9:30 Eastern. The New York Rangers at Vancouver at 10 Eastern. Big Ten Tournament Basketball, Illinois against Iowa at 4:30 Central Time today. And Rutgers against Minnesota about 25 minutes after. So right around 6:55, they expect, will be the tip-off for that game from Madison Square Garden. NBA tonight, Milwaukee at Detroit at 6 o'clock. Toronto at Orlando at 6 o'clock. Indiana at Atlanta at 6:30. Charlotte at Boston at 6:30. Golden State at Washington at 7. Phoenix at Memphis at 7. Oklahoma City at Dallas at 7:30. New Orleans at San Antonio at 7:30. And Houston at the LA Clippers at 9:30. Major League Baseball, plenty of spring training games. The Twins in a split squad lost to Tampa Bay 3-1 and also beat Houston 4-2. That is a look at what's on deck here for tonight. It's time for us to wrap it up. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. A big thank you to John Folkey and Brandon Warren for joining the show today. We'll talk to Pete Blackburn of CBS Sports, recapping the NHL trade deadline. Plus, we'll talk a little bit of the Olympics as well. So be sure to tune in for that tomorrow on the show. Until then, have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 3:05.